So, how do you think his trips to Paris influenced him as an artist and as a person?
Well, you certainly can look at the works that he produced during his time in Paris and how he experimented and explored that which was seemingly most interesting to him, which would be the works in the Impressionist vein. The other thing to keep in mind is that there were many artists, American artists, traveling to Paris in the 20s, post World War I. And seeking out those artists and those schools that were perhaps on the avant-garde. I mean, we had already seen the Armory Show in New York in 1913. Those modernist artists who had exhibited their work there, those European modernists, had already made a sensation. And so there were Americans who were traveling abroad to experience that or learn more about it or become modernist practitioners themselves. What obviously happened with Wood is that that was not something that was interesting to him. His time in Germany, of course, later in the 20s when he was working on the Memorial Window, would have an impact on him because he would have the opportunity to see a lot of not only more modernist German works, but also important Northern European works from the Renaissance and Baroque periods. So the other thing too about his time in Paris, and I think of this often, is that when you look at other artists who are important contemporaries of Grant Wood's, you can argue about whether Norman Rockwell, for instance, is a fine artist or an illustrator or a little bit of both. He also traveled to France in the 1920s, sort of going through a period of self-examination and tried unsuccessfully to adopt a different style of painting, which was not to his taste, and of course abandoned that and just went back to doing what he knew how to do, which was illustrations for things like Saturday Evening Post and Brown and Bigelow and that sort of thing. So that's where his livelihood came from. Similarly, Edward Hopper traveled abroad in the teens, I believe, and also looked at what was going on in Europe and discarded that for what he preferred to do. So you have these three artists, I think, who are kindred spirits, all sort of rejecting the prevailing trends in modernism, maybe picking up a few elements that were interesting to them. And incorporating that into their work, but pretty much creating a style of work that was unique to them and perhaps not to anybody else. And I think that's a very interesting sort of thing. And perhaps we would not be talking about Grant Wood if he had more readily adapted to a different style or whatever was in vogue and trending at the time, or if he had experimented with cubism or surrealism or other styles, we may not know him as the artist that he is.
So you think this trip to Germany really had a direct influence on his style?
Yes, and I think that Wanda Corn wrote about that. I believe James Dennis touched on it. Certainly, Tripp Evans in his book talks about that. That was it seems like it was a very happy time for him. It was a significant work in his career. He was being recognized in Cedar Rapids by his colleagues and his friends and his supporters and patrons. And it was a big deal for him to get that commission, and he put, as Nan, I'll paraphrase, but he put everything into it and reinvested whatever money he got from that commission back into it to make sure that it was good and that he was satisfied with the results. And so when you have that level of commitment to a particular project or work of art in this case, you can't help but feel that is an important watershed moment for him as an artist and what he is trying to achieve.
Tell us about this art colony that he founded in Stone City.
Well, you know, I'm not an expert on Stone City, but by any means, there are other people here in Iowa who are. But what I can say, just from my own limited knowledge, is that it was very much like the other artist colonies that were being formed around the country at the time and previously. There was the Woodstock Artist Colony in Woodstock, New York. There were other colonies like that, which were places where artists were able to associate with like-minded people, like-minded creative people, who could join together and be inspired by each other's work, perhaps learn from each other, perhaps teach each other, and so therefore develop their own art, their own picture making, their own creativity. And so that was a significant thing. Of course, it was the beginning of the Great Depression, and there wasn't a lot of resource around for artists, and they had to make do with what they could. Of course, too, it's also, times are difficult to such that it's hard to sustain something like that, then it's not surprising that an enterprise like that might not be able to last for very long, given the strains and pressures that might be on the individual people trying to participate in such a venture. But certainly, it was a temporary community full of camaraderie, interesting people, interesting ideas, and for some people, interesting art created as a result of that experience. And of course, it feeds into that sort of that agrarian, rural lifestyle. Sort of feeds into Wood's vision. As a painter of more simple things, ideas, and experiences that are based on his growing up in Anamosa, Cedar Rapids.
So, Grant Wood is thought to have started this American movement called regionalism, or other people gave him that title.
You know, what's interesting is that we do sort of attribute that movement to him and Thomas Craven, and who was the author, who was a very interested supporter of Wood, Thomas Hart Benton, John Stuart Curry, and Marvin Cohn were, of course, all in this group of people of artists who were interested not in what was happening in the cities, but more so what was happening in the country where the real people lived. But now I would sort of qualify that by saying that if you look, say, for instance, in Britain in the same period and a little earlier, you will find works that are very similar in tenor and approach, and that there were other people in the world, Western world, will say, that were interested in the same kinds of impulses and capturing the same simple, more humble aspects of life, life on the farm, life in the country, life away from the city, and that sort of thing. So I think it's really kind of interesting. I think it's perhaps reflective of the mood in the world more so than specifically what was happening in Iowa. And it was probably manyfold and why it was so, but certainly you would look at it as an impulse to react against modernity, the war, the First World War, troubles that are in the world that seem to be associated with government politics, consumerism, capitalism, and those sorts of forces that perhaps make people feel insecure, and so they would reach out or seek out art forms of art or ways of thinking that would they could be more comfortable with. In what is essentially a changing, rapidly changing world, in fact.
Well, some people say that, you know, he was dubbed this regionalist artist, and that he was running around in overhauls, but he really, this was all just a big act, including people at the University of Iowa.
Well, there was that aspect to it, but of course, I think if you were going to create a brand, a regionalist brand or an American scene brand, which sort of generally is the term that covers the entirety of artists who are working in a similar vein in that period, you would think that he would want to portray a certain aspect of him and his life and his thinking that would give people a sense of some sort of authenticity to that way of thinking, and you know, because if he were walking around in a suit, for instance, as he did when he was teaching at Iowa, you know, he's very well dressed and very dapper and dapper guy. He did not look like a farmer by any means, but you know, it's the kind of the mantle that you adopt to sort of reinforce the position that you take in the world, whether with your opinions or your politics or your art. And then I do think that there was a little stress on him. I mean, that we know that there was stress on him because of his life, particularly with regard to the University of Iowa and the discord there. With Lester Longman and H.W. Janssen and other forces, and of course, Wood did not have a fine art degree, and not really, nor did he have a college degree, and so by comparison, he might have felt, or perhaps did feel, that he was not quite measuring up, and perhaps was not being treated like he was measuring up to essentially his colleagues and his competitors there at the University of Iowa at the time. So the result of that is when you look at the Figge Art Museum's portrait, self-portrait that Wood did, he started in 1932 and revised it in 1941. He's gone from having this, a white work shirt, a collared work shirt, and overalls, to having painted that out completely to disguise the overalls, and has sort of a generic blue shirt on in the self-portrait. And that suggests to me that he is not comfortable with the persona that he had created for himself, the persona he created for himself. And is looking to revise that, perhaps for his legacy, perhaps for the critics, and that sort of thing. So it clearly was something that was on his mind. We wouldn't have the evidence in his artwork if it hadn't been.
Well, Iowa now seems to be embracing him because they have this big thing going on this fall. Tell us about it.
Yes, and this is a part of their sort of biannual Grant Wood Symposium, and it's twofold, as you know. It's both to discuss more thoroughly Grant Wood the artist and his impact or influence or what have you, and also to embrace new young artists and give them an opportunity to expand their what they do, and as a part of this Grant Wood colony, as you know, which was helped in a great deal, a great part by Jim Hayes, who lives currently in Grant Wood's Court Street home. So it's a great sort of fertile field for young artists to come and have a residency at the University of Iowa and hopefully expand their horizons and further develop their work.
So what do you think Grant Wood's legacy is?
Well, I think, not being an expert, I think that Grant Wood's legacy can be found in his art. And notwithstanding conversations about politics or sexuality or, you know, whether he was a good professor or a bad professor, a good friend or not, I think he was, generally speaking, well-liked, obviously, by people in the Cedar Rapids community and those people who were close to him. His legacy is through his art. So if his art did not speak, if his art had no voice, we wouldn't be having this conversation. It would not be interesting, I think, for people to be talking about it unless there was something enigmatic, something tangible, something intangible that we could pick up on and respond to as people who are either enjoying his art or researching his art or researching his life or just trying to know more about important people in Iowa. He, you know, whether you like his work or not, the fact is that we continue to have these conversations and we have them more so now than ever. I would imagine that there are probably examples where this Art Institute acquired works of art, just like any museum, where nobody's talking about those artists, and perhaps those works are in storage somewhere, or maybe they were deaccessioned at some point in the past. And it's true with many museums, but you would have to think that since this work. And the other works, too, like Herbert Hoover's Birthplace, Dinner for Threshers, his self-portrait, the Fall Plowing painting, which is in the collection of the John Deere Company. These works all seem to have something that is attractive and interesting to people and causes them to want to think about them, to engage in them, to interact with them, to perhaps understand them better, and that is the power of art, and it is an example, I think, of when an artist has been successful, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally, but the artist has been successful in communicating something that has somehow resonated with people. There are people, speaking of which, there are, you know, European scholars who are interested in Grant Wood's work. And since there is that energy, I think people will continue to be attracted to or react against or be inspired by or want to be critical of a work of an artist like Grant Wood.
So what do you think about this exhibit, this lithographs, and then this history of penmanship exhibit?
I think it's great. It's, I'm not familiar with the full width and breadth of what Wood did as an illustrator, his commercial work. But, it's what you do as an artist to get by. And again, you look at somebody like Norman Rockwell, and there are plenty of other artists out there who had this sort of side or parallel career of doing commercial illustration work, whether for advertising or for books and that sort of thing. And it's it's in some ways it's utilitarian. It's less the opportunities for creativity are much narrower because of the nature of the subject matter and what's trying to be communicated. In other words, the artist is not coming up with the message. It's the company that they're painting for or drawing for that has the message that the artist needs to somehow convey. And so it's interesting. And this will be the first time that all of these drawings are together and in place, and the Figge is happy to support the Waterley Center for the Arts and putting on this exhibition.